This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto from Vision 2025. I am having a blast. It's only day one, Ben. And I got to tell you, I don't know how it's probably going to beat last year, but it's already started for me. Ben Dexter is here with me, the National Training Manager of Napa Trax. By the way, nice shirt. Thank you. Nice sign. Thank you.
You look good in blue.
We do appreciate Napa Trax sponsoring us to be here at Vision this year. I don't know. On-site training, 6 day a week support. You're the guy, the National Training Manager, and NAPATRACS.com. Thank you so much. And additional partners that are involved on the show. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with Napa Autotech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, did you know that Napa Trax has on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find Napa Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Okay, welcome back. Ben, I got to tell you, every time I seem to get into a little panel discussion, round table with shop owners, and they're talking about shop management systems, you know, mine does this and mine does that. And it's like, when I pulled out the picture of my kids when they were young, look what they're doing and all this neat stuff. And I ask them a question. Do you believe you're using the full capacity of your system? They can't answer me because I don't think they know all their capabilities. And how I believe that's a real true statement is we end up with V2, V2.1, V2.5, V3, and we get these emails and we see our system going through some kind of updates or click here and get the latest stuff, but we don't stop to read the manual about what's new in the new version and what it means to me. So I don't mean to go on this long diatribe or get on my soapbox, but I'm thinking, man, you would be a great person to help explain to my audience what they can do about maximizing their shop management system. Since you've been in it for years, you've worked in the field, your pedigree is so strong, I don't think I could listen to a better person.
Oh, Carm, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share my experience. And that's what this is the reality of having a piece of software that over the years was being developed unbeknownst to us as operators. We focused on the things that we signed up for. We wanted invoicing. We wanted to be able to look at a Napa catalog and a labor guide. You know, that was in the very early years of Trax offerings. And, you know, a lot of shop owners, they can sympathize with that. They realize that.
Did a lot of them just not break out of that?
Their needs are met, and a growth mindset isn't always the first thought. I've seen it in all the shop operations over and over again that I've asked that same question is, you know, are you doing this? Are you doing that? And you get kind of the blank stare. I think the reality is that, you know, a lot of shop owners, no dig on them, no shade or anything thrown towards them. But the reality is there's no shortage of great technicians in the industry that become business owners. They go out and do it themselves, but they're not good business people. Right. So they get a piece of software that they're comfortable with and they use the minimum and they get by. And then as they grow the business, that's kind of like the blind leading the blind. When I got to the shop that I operated Trax at, they had used it at a very basic level, and they never really pushed the envelope of what the software could do. And that's, you know, I think necessity is the mother of invention. All shop management software is somewhat created equal when dealing with customers and cars and the daily show. But the reality of having an organization that I work for now that I was a customer of for years, the depth of the application is tremendous. You know, if there's an idea, it's probably been brought up by our customers in the past 30 years.
I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago, a dozen shop owners in the room, and I asked them, who's using labor matrixes? One person raised their hand. The other ones, I said, did you know your system has that? Dead stare. No one wanted to admit that there was something they didn't quite appreciate or understand. I found that fascinating, which is why I'm asking you these questions. And it's not just that. What other tools inside the shop management systems today do you find that aren't being fully utilized?
I think if I just touch back on the labor matrix, piece, there's a lot of shops that I talk to, they've heard rumblings of it. Labor matrix isn't a term that people like scratch their head and say, what are you talking about? They familiarize themselves at some level with the term. I think coming to grips with the reality of the impact of the pay structure for the employees is where there's a barrier for entry. For an example, a shop owner that operates a flat rate shop, there's this weird feeling of a labor matrix, if I don't compensate the technician, feels dirty. It feels like something we shouldn't do. With most labor matrix in mind, there should be opportunities to share the increase so that there's nobody that's left out. Trax does a phenomenal job of covering all three alternatives for pay plans when it comes to labor matrix.
So you mean salary, flat rate, and a hybrid?
Exactly. Okay. And how they're going to share that with the employee. Mm-hmm. But I think if I could give anybody advice, I think the barrier for entry is just understanding. But if you're going to go forward with labor matrix, involving the staff in that discussion is the most important part of that. If we try to implement it without discussing it with the team, it's definitely going to come off as something dirty and underhanded because a technician's going to say, hey, you know, this is my livelihood that we're talking about.
I totally agree. The word transparency is high today. The word, I saw this incredible chart about all these issues that exist in business today, but mainly in shops and all the things you have to be concerned and worry about. And what do you think was in the middle? Communication. And then that whole thing of communications came into transparency that we're all communicating on the same level. So you find something new, you think it's going to be great for the business, but you just don't flip it on and figure, oh, they'll figure it out. No. Hey, listen, we're going to do this thing. Team, let's get together. I mean, that's why it's the importance of having huddles and meetings.
Every day. That's what we did.
Every day.
Every day.
And work that. Marcus Lemonis spoke this morning in the keynote, and I've done an episode with Kim Auerheimer on it. We talked a lot about what Marcus said, CNBC, the show called The Prophet, and all that stuff. Unbelievable. He's in the industry. And I just heard Corey Ivaldi say what Marcus Lemonis taught me was the word, I got to get back to being a capitalist. I have to be a, if capitalism is important. And Corey said, I got to make some more profits. Marcus said, profit's not a dirty word.
Exactly.
And it's not.
We shouldn't be ashamed to make money.
Because you know what we're paying for drinks here? Huh? For a $4 bottle of wine? No, I'm sure it's $6. I've been just so on a rampage about taking that next level. The top performers help us get these other ones across. Our reputation is hurt by the non-players, if you will, in the industry that aren't trying to become more professional. And so much of the success and the profits that we have, the quality of our people, the efficiency of our people has to do with that piece of software that runs our world and runs our life and all the hooks and all the attachments to it.
Absolutely.
You see it every day. So when you're, I guess what I'm trying to find out, what are you hearing? What's the talk?
The focus that I've seen here in the last 2 years has been on the customer experience, which is interesting. You know, shop management softwares have lots of offerings for upgrades, integrations that go above and beyond what the core of the program was meant to offer. But a lot of folks, I think, dove into the digital vehicle inspection, the DVI space, as a shortcut for a mediocre service writer. It made selling much easier because a picture's worth 1,000 words, and what we do in this industry is largely invisible. So if you don't have a silver-tongued devil for a service writer, it can be a struggle. So DVI was a great way to help a service writer kind of bridge the gap with the customer. But what I've seen the last couple of years are people that are leveraging the full shop management system offering in the capacity of, if it doesn't benefit the customer, then I don't want to touch that part of it, which oddly enough, inventory, we've talked in the past about this on some of our shows that I've been on with you, is that's a topic that comes up every day of the week, inventory control. And how does that impact the customer situation tremendously when it's a waiter and I don't have that product sitting on a shelf that I should, but also availability of parts and quality of parts. So inventory control is a massive part of shop management. It should be. It's not in all shop management softwares, but in ours it is, which naturally, I think with NAPA being a distributor, we would have those features.
Did you and I ever play that game? How many times you sold it and you stock it? Did we ever do that together?
I don't know.
I was doing it with someone. Get a printout or ask your computer system to search every part you sold. If you put it into the work order under the proper part number.
Yes, novel idea.
Yeah, but a lot of times they don't want to because people are going to go on to, you know, other sites and see what it costs. But if they don't want to pay for your services, for your investment, for all your education of your, anyway, don't get me started there. But you print it out and you put it into an Excel spreadsheet and you kind of sort it and you say, oh my God, I bought 10 of these rotors from my supplier down the street. Oh my God, I got this unbelievable, if you will, Camrys. There's so many Camrys in my DMA. I should stock at least two. Isn't that a no-brainer kind of report?
It's not intuitive. So some shops will have basic inventory control and they want to manage quantity on hand. What you're talking about is the next level.
Discussing what I should have.
What I should have and maybe what I should return that I'm not using.
Exactly.
It's funny you bring up the brake rotor piece because we had a large inventory room going back as an operator and we stocked brake rotors, and anybody that's been in the industry for a minute will get a chuckle from this. The early 2000s F-150 pickup trucks, before I even explain it, somebody's smiling, is back then there were two-wheel drive trucks, four-wheel drive trucks, 12-millimeter stud, 14-millimeter stud, lightning, non-lightning. There was 9 or 10 different rotors. Well, we stocked them. And in fact, we stocked more than our supplying Napa store because of the fleet accounts that come in with those trucks. And when does the technician figure out they didn't check the rotor correctly when it's already installed back on that truck and they go to put the wheels on and the studs are the wrong size? You know, that's a great example of, you know, the day the owners I worked for said, why are we stocking rotors? And I said, because, well, when we make a mistake like that, because we're human, we can recover from that mistake very quickly rather than wait for another delivery or a delay in delivery that needs to get that truck back on the road. So inventory control has as much to do with having it now, but also having the human element eliminated when there's multiple options. So if there's two or three different fitments on the same vehicle, stocking each of those is a fantastic idea for all the times that cataloging might be a little off, or that vehicle VIN number might not have decoded the way that we wanted it to. But having the coverage is the most important part. Certainly, we don't want a parts store in our inventory room. But
no, we don't. But you want to be efficient. You could list parts supply network as a bad cog in a wheel of efficiency. But oh my God, there's four or five people in my town. And if they don't have it, I'll go to him and I'll put pressure on him to get it to me in 8 minutes. We have other things to do. We're going to walk around the car. By that time, the parts should be here. It doesn't always work like that. And I'm not trying to have or come up with the theory, Carm's trying to tell us we got to spend 10 grand on inventory. Well, if you're measuring the investment of your inventory, oh, maybe that's not the right thing. But if you're managing specialist efficiency, bay efficiency, CX, customer experience, and promise, time is all we have to sell. We have processes, we have people, and we have product, and our product is time. And you have to manage time. You invest in a lot of tooling to do that. You invest in educating your people to do that. Again, why not inventory to cover your butter? And not because, like in your case of the F-250, that it would quickly solve a problem. And that would be, you can start the brake job now. You don't have to wait for a delivery unless you're anticipating the brake job's coming and you order them the day before. I get all of that. I really, really do. So there are a couple of ways to skin a cat. But in your problem scenario, that's brilliant.
And profitability is a big part of this too. We shouldn't be afraid to make money. If I can negotiate, you know, what inventory that I have based on my buying power,
yeah,
you know, 4,800 brake clean we were buying from our supplier, we'd buy it by the pallet because we could get a better price on it. We knew we were going to use that. But if we didn't have inventory control, that pallet would slowly disappear and we would not collect for 2/3 of it because those cans would just roll out the parts room without being billed to a customer. So inventory control, I think, is one of those features where, you know, you're asking, hey, you know, what are the things that we hear in the field? There's two things that I see in the industry. And, you know, I've even had a few customer experiences with shop owners that I trust. And I've asked the customer, you know, what are the two problems with this shop? I can't get my car back on time and my car isn't fixed right the first time. Those are the two biggest problems from the customer's perspective. And it's not price, oddly enough. There are price shoppers out there. I think every shop's going to deal with that. But I want fix-it style customers. And if I can't get their car fixed on time and I can't get it fixed right the first time, which I think there's a little bit of tie-in between those because we're rushed. We're not organized. We don't have a service counter that's leveraging the tool they have in front of them. Their shop management system is the quarterback of the game. And if they're not going to use it right, you're going to have a bunch of bottlenecks that you create yourself. So it's not necessarily where we were mentioning maybe feature set. It's what are the marching orders? What is the standard operating, you know, procedure for a service writer at this shop? And you might have different levels of service writer. You might have a greeter that's, you know, maybe an entry-level service writer. You might have a service manager, and you might have a couple of rookies that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. But the reality is if the customer experience suffers, it's been my experience, I think somebody might agree with me here, is that you could have the best technicians in the world, but if you have a weak service counter experience, we're going to struggle. Those technicians are going to be in trouble. But if the reverse was the dynamic, it's pretty common in the industry. We might be weak in the shop from the technician side, but if we have a strong service counter, we're going to be just fine. You know, that's all the person, not the software.
Are you an NAPA Auto Care Center who is ready to take your shop to the next level? Then the Premier Tier NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program is exactly what you need. Gold Certified Auto Care Centers provide customers with a consistent experience no matter where they are in the U.S. Now, this means they are more likely to return and support your shop or find your Gold Certified Auto Care Center while on the road. Gold Certified members can maximize technology, increase their local marketing opportunities, and have a fully trained team that keeps up with the latest trends. Simply put, the Gold Certified NAPA Auto Care Program powered by your local brand will set you apart. A true partnership is a two-way street. Shops must meet specific criteria to be eligible for the many benefits of gold. Now, NAPA Auto Care rewards its most committed partners, their gold certified members, with free premium shop referrals on the NAPA online locator, annual marketing dollars, an enhanced warranty, training opportunities, program rebates, and so much more. Are you ready to get started? Contact your local NAPA sales representative to discuss your eligibility and apply today. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, take your auto care center to the next level, the gold level, with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. This program is for the best of the best who can provide a consistent consumer experience and earn the trust of returning and new customers. Talk to your NAPA sales representative about how you can become a gold certified shop. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NAPA Trax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NAPA Trax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NAPA Trax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NAPA Trax, that's NAPATRACS.com. Strong service counter. We always talk about the medical field. Marcus Lemonis this morning said, the service advisor is the nurse, and the technician, that I like to call the specialist, is the doctor. And that's how, in your mind, as he was talking to all these technicians, specialist service advisors that were in this audience, I'm going to guess there were somewhere near 800-900 of us in the audience. Wow. For the keynote. He says, put yourself in the medical field. We talk about this all the time. The nurse does your vitals, does the high-level stuff, wants to find out, oh, it hurts here. She writes it down for the doctor, right? All of that information that flows to the doctor comes from the SA or the nurse. They're not a doctor. Don't try to be. Empathize with the patient. They're here. They have a problem. They don't want to be here. everything's identical to automotive repair, right?
Yes.
I have a problem. I don't want to be here. I know it's going to cost money. We've got specialists in the back that can take care of you. Are you kidding me? We're going to send it to one of them. And the specialist becomes the doctor. And the DVI is one of his tools.
That's right. And if any good nurse or any good hospital, they don't just throw 25 patients at a doctor in any random order.
That's right.
There's an organization of delivery and an expectation that needs to be met on the different stages of making your way. So, hey, I've been to the emergency room once or twice. You know, you go in and they get your vitals first. They check you in. There's a process before you even talk to the doctor. And that's what a lot of shops, I think they miss that in, you know, the waiting room full of people. They're not all at the same stage of the experience of coming to the shop. Yeah. So that's where
I don't mean to say that the DVR is a critical tool of the specialist or the technician. What I mean to say, it's one of the tools, like when they look in your ear with the ear thing, it's telling them something as he continues to work all over you. I mean, the further education and these brilliant diagnosticians that we have out in the field, I'm not minimizing that at all by saying DVI is your tool. It's not. It's probably someone else's tool in the business. Car back on time. I mean, it's all process. It's all think ahead. It's all workflow. It's all manage that. The right individual gets the right job. And again, you know what I'd love to see? God, would somebody in the industry have a flow chart on how the story is getting the car back to the customer on time? Here are the flows and the if comes in. What ifs?
We had those at Kennesaw Auto Center in 2002. And there were literally documents that I create that came from Word, and I used the insert shapes, and it literally had flow charts of who's in possession of that work order at what time. The service writer greets and writes it up, then assigns it to the technician. The technician does the diagnosis or inspection, hands it back to the service writer. If we don't have a flow, then we don't know where to look for the breakdown. There's going to be a breakdown at some point. But when you said if and when, or yes or no, which direction do we go? And there's only three or four general paths that a work order is going to take. But if somebody steps out of order, a ticket gets left on a toolbox, somebody forgets about it. You know, we get into a situation where, you know, most service writers, they have all the tools they need in front of them and a stack of repair orders that need to be looked at 8 a.m. If 10:30 in the morning comes 2.5 hours later and we still have all those uninspected vehicles sitting there, check out and back out is a big thing in the industry. Is let's get a pulse on the situation. It's triage in the medical world.
Yeah.
Let's try to figure out what are we up against right now. And that's nothing to do with the software. That's not the shop management system that does that. That's the operator of the shop management system. We could put two different people in the cockpit of an airplane, and, you know, a normal Delta pilot that made their way up through commercial airline industry, or you could put a fighter pilot that left the military. Fighter pilot might be able to fly that plane a little bit differently. And that's what the professional service writer does over somebody who's new.
That's why I love having you on the show, because you've been there and done that.
Okay.
And now, of course, you're doing all the training that you can on tracks. When you're doing training on tracks, without being specific to a feature of yours, what are you hearing from the audience? What kind of questions are they asking?
Well, if they ask the question, that's actually progress these days. Training is the last thing that people think of. I'm a firefighter that's there when I need to be there. But when you get to somebody to the training, they don't know where to go.
I got
to
stop you for a moment, Ben. Training reminds me of repetitive task. Like I want to be a better putter. So I hire a putting coach who trains me on all the mechanics that it takes to putt that ball, no matter what situations. So I'm going to sit 30 feet away from the hole for 2 hours and putt my butt off. And he's training me to do that. Education, on the other hand, and that's where my language shift is going, is how do we train a person over and over again on how to have a trusted relationship with a client, or do we educate them to find their own script?
The individual thumbprint of every shop that I've ever been inside of, they're all different. Their customer base is different. They've conditioned the customer base, if they've been open long enough, to operate within their means. Sometimes it's not good. I've pointed out a few things like, you know, you might do something a little different. The customers maybe in that general area, they accept it. But I agree with you. The way that we train, in my perspective, without getting into the weeds, is primarily from the software perspective, is role-based training. let's say you use your putter, for example, you know, you've got an instructor that's come in to show you one aspect of swinging clubs. That's just moving the putter. There's a lot to golf that's more than just what's on the green. And the reality of the training in any shot management system is if we don't know who our audience is, then we're going to provide them with the manual for everything that that software does. And that doesn't relate to their job. So something we do that's unique and is something that I came up with a while ago, because I read a 700-page tracks manual. It wasn't exciting, but I'm that guy. I'm wired that way. I want to read every page and I want to understand it. And we couldn't find many employees that were thinking like that. So I thought to myself, if I'm a service writer, I want to know about this software, how it relates to my job. I don't need to know how it was set up in the beginning or the details of profitability, the manager reports. I need to know about estimating and ordering and, you know, subestimates or recommended services. So we created a role-based training program that gives everybody basic training in the beginning. And I kind of picked that up from a buddy of mine in the Coast Guard is, you know, if we don't understand what each person's role in the business is, we don't understand a shortcut that I take on my side, how that impacts somebody else down the line. So there's a kind of a basic training of, imagine role-based training like a pitchfork. Everybody goes down the handle together. That's basic training. And then when you get to the head of the pitchfork, the individual tines are the different roles in the shop. You've got a technician, a service writer, a manager, an owner, a back office person, an inventory person, a cashier, a technician. We have seven different roles that we've created. So that's a great way to kind of organize the shop management piece of it. Here's how that piece of software works. But without SOPs, without somebody thinking about how are we going to interact with that customer, the software won't do it for us. Now, I'm sure the brilliant minds of AI and the future of technology, there's probably somebody that's going to try to figure out a better way to eliminate the human experience.
I love what you just said. And I also love that you just said AI. Is that coming? I know, first of all, no, wait, sorry. We've done a ton of episodes on it. It's here. Are you finding people reaching out to AI to help them clean up some of their pros?
I do it myself.
All right.
I fought it for a while. So if you're listening to this and you're like, all right, AI, no, I'm not doing it. ChatGPT.
Yeah, every time Ben sends me an email, it sounds like a novel. Sounds like John Grisham wrote it. That's great.
Just from an AI perspective, since you brought it up, ChatGPT, you can quite literally ask it shop SOPs, service writer SOPs, technician SOPs, best practices in the automotive industry, and it spits them out and it is accurate. I'm blown away. I am a fresh ChatGPT person. So I'm certainly, I'm not saying I've been there from day one, but wow.
Where's it getting it?
It gets it from all their language models. So their language models are multiple different types, but they have a reason option, which is my favorite here lately, but you got to pay for it if you use it too much. They give you a certain amount of reasoning, you know, AI hits, but it's phenomenal. They collect this information from a mixture of what's available online, which is immense. And it's the three L's. It's a learning language model, large language something. I'm blown away by it. It's not like you said, hey, I sent an email with AI and it looks like, you know, some Stephen King novel got written and spit out. I'm sure it'll do that. If it says, hey, write this paper for me, I'm sure AI will make it sound not like I wrote it. But the reality of being able to search for facts, and you should fact check AI, please. I found a couple of things where I was like, I don't know if I agree with that. But by and large, I was absolutely blown away. It was amazing.
Okay. I own an apartment complex. I have somebody that hasn't paid the rent. And I asked ChatGPT to write me a nice first letter that I can send to my client. I get no response. ChatGPT, make this letter a little harder, a little tougher. Next letter.
Actually, you could ask ChatGPT, let's make this first letter compliant with my.
Oh my God. Yes. Sure don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Give me the current form and the compliance for my area.
So you said fix it right the first time. Come on. I mean, you're out there, you're talking to shop owners. What's the gap here? Is it that we're rushing? We don't have enough equipment. Is it the education? What do you think?
I think the snowball starts with the interview with the customer in the very beginning. We can't fix a car right the first time if we don't find a way to translate what the customer's telling us to the technician. For example, if Carm comes in and says, hey, I want an oil change, a tire rotation, and a brake check. I'm not having any symptoms. And, you know, I've got this weird sound that's happening on my vehicle. If the service writer just writes up oil change, brake check, and that's it, and hands it to a technician, we're starting off on the wrong foot. We're not asking questions. The interview process, and shop management doesn't do this for a service writer. I need to ask Carm questions about that sound, that smell, that leak, who, what, when, where, and how. So many times, I'll give you a great example that I learned in the industry as an operator. If somebody complains of a noise, my first question, who heard the noise? And if the person that heard the noise is not standing in front of me, or I'm not communicating directly with them, conversation's over. I'm not going to spend another 30 seconds talking to that person, and they get aggravated. My son's in school right now. I'll wait till 3:15 p.m. when he gets out of class and he can call me. I'm not going to drive the vehicle or check it out until I speak directly to the person, because that game we played as kids where we went around and, you know, we started and we whispered in each other's ear, it's going to be wrong by the time it gets to us. And so many times we averted a problem where, no, that's not what happens. It only happens in the neighborhood in the first 100 yards when I leave the driveway after it rains. You know, that's the kind of thing that our service writers, they're not doing that. So if I don't get my car fixed on time, a lot of it is a delay. Some of it's unintentional. Technicians looking at the wrong car. If we don't communicate clearly with a customer, when do you want your car back, and use some sort of logic that would let a customer know we can't meet that objective, tell them right there. You know, an oil change, I need it back in an hour. There's 8 people in front of you. That's probably not going to be likely. We're going to do our best, but it's going to be more or less this type of time frame. But I think an oil change is maybe too basic. Diagnostics. We give away a ton of diagnostic time in this industry. We got a technician, the most highly paid one in the shop, using the most expensive equipment. We're not selling parts. I'm preaching to the choir about the diagnostic problem we have in this industry, but then we don't sell enough time. We don't let the customer know. This isn't something where they think we go grab a magic box and we plug it in, because the parts stores that will not be named do it on the curb, right? You know, those are the ones that do the free checks, and they make it harder for the true professional in the general public's eyes. So that's a little tangent, I know, but the
it's a good tangent. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. But yeah, the reality, I think, is that it all starts and stops at the service counter. And if my car's not fixed on time, it's the service writer's fault, in my opinion.
Well, you know what we should do? We should do an episode on noise. We've heard unbelievable stories in a class on diagnostics, where it all started at the counter and the questions were being asked. And, you know, some of these trainers brought real live, honest to God problems and then solutions. Every time I go to a restaurant, pick a place, I hear this noise. And nowhere else? No. Well, tell me about this restaurant. What town's it in? How do you have to get there? And so the service advisor was quizzing and quizzing and quizzing, and found out that this place is on a hill. And so when the car got up to a certain grade, they heard the noise. It was in the trunk. And I don't think he got paid to solve that problem. What's the noise sound like? It was something rolling around in the trunk. It's like one of those aha moments that we almost in life have to experience ourselves one time, invest an hour to try to figure it out. And then there's the brilliance of the wisdom of so many of us in the industry.
Absolutely. I think if we slow it down, we reduce the number of opportunities that we can get it wrong. And then that domino effect, you know, shops out there that I hear say, hey, I have a car count problem, I'm starving. I don't know if you have a car count problem. If you're flooding your bays with problems, you just have an exponential situation that's growing and growing. And it's something that a lot of, and I have some classes that I'm teaching here at the Napa Now event where I get to talk about the, you know, the hamster wheel that a lot of shops run on.
Oh my God.
And that's exciting, because sometimes we just need to be led to water. You know, a horse needs to be led to water. You can't make them drink. I might dunk their head in the water. They might realize that it's fresh and they need to drink it. But the reality is that a lot of the industry is full of shop owners that weren't necessarily business people when they started, and yeah, they don't like to be wrong. They don't like to give away money. They don't like to lose money. That's a real thing. I wouldn't like to. So the old owners I worked for, I said, hey, I know you don't like problems, but what if I froze you in time for a year and you came back to life and there's $2 million in the bank? Oh yeah, I like that idea. Tell me more. But what if we had to have a car fall off the rack? What if we had to have somebody write a horrible review about us 12 times in that year? What if somebody's grandma thought we took advantage of them? What if 3 employees quit on the spot and left us where we had nobody? Would the $2 million still work? And he said, yeah, it would. And I said, well, then why is it that we have these problems today when the $2 million is not made yet? And he was like, oh my God. I said, hey, I set you up.
Well, there's a slap.
Yep. Those problems are part of the business. Yeah, yeah. We can reduce them, you know, they're part of the business. We need to make money.
I go back to the rule of holes. You need to know when to stop digging. And almost it's get off the hamster wheel. And maybe that's the new way that we on this podcast can start talking to that next level of struggling shop owners, the technicians who became business owners, and they didn't fix themselves nor the business, and they don't know what they don't know on getting to where they need to get and the kinds of monies that can be made and the kind of talent that they can hire. And so as I preach all the time, you need to get involved with an expert, with a coach, with a 20 group, a networking group. Please humble yourself and go do that. And maybe the drive is what you just said. Get off the hamster wheel. I just talked to Jim Morton. Wife died. They didn't have a chance to spend the time in Florida because he worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked. This is a couple of years ago that she passed, but he just reminded me how precious life is.
Absolutely. There are more fly by your seat of the pants shops than there are the one percenters that get it. And it's amazing. The opportunity in the industry for anybody to do what I was able to do with the shop I was a part of or any other shop that's successful. It's just a little bit of effort. You know, get outside of your comfort zone.
Wow. Ben Dexter, National Training Manager, Napatrax, thanks for your wisdom.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.